everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We are off and running on a brand new week. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That's our telephone live line. If folks would like to join the conversation, 790-2040. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. That means you anywhere in the world, if you've got your computer and into the internet, you can listen to this program live. And all of our programs are available on podcast, again, at buckmastershow.com. A ton of content that goes back to the first week in January when we began the radio show in 2011. So there's a lot there. And we are off and running Monday, July 10th, 2023. Some places got some rain in southern Arizona, which is good. It's first rain in about 2 months in the area. Our radio program did start 12 and a half years ago, and we are now, 55 years for me in the business, 35 years here in Tucson. Time for our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, and hanging services and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. This week's one-on-one interview, Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan. General Buchanan retired after a 37-year Army career in 2019. In addition to commanding the 6,000 troops on the southwest border, he led the military operation in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. He had four tours in Iraq, one in Afghanistan. A graduate of the University of Arizona and its ROTC program, General Buchanan is a consultant to the Department of Homeland Security, senior advisor to Vet Force Foundation, a volunteer deputy sheriff in Cochise County, where he resides with his wife on a small ranch outside of Patagonia, about 13 miles from the Mexican border. And did I say, to add to his what else can he do, right? He is a commissioner for the Arizona Game and Fish Department. A very impressive resume, and welcome to our program, General Buchanan.
Well, Bill, thanks for letting me join you today. It really is an honor.
I saw your byline. You did a piece in Newsweek where you were talking about should these cartels in Mexico, should they be designated what's known as FTOs, foreign terrorist organizations? And this has been an undercurrent, General Buchanan, for going back to the Trump administration. There's some in Washington who say, hey, these are terrorists. Let's go after these people. Let's designate them FTOs. Bad idea?
I think it's a good idea to designate them as foreign terrorist organizations, but I think it's a bad idea to plan to use our military to go across the border uninvited by the Mexican forces. You know, I worked very closely with the Mexican Army, the Mexican Marines, and to a lesser extent, their police forces. But we have a very close working relationship on intelligence connections, and make no mistake about it, these cartels are bad people, bad organizations with bad intent. I think that where the discussion has gone astray is when what I mentioned in that one op-ed, mm-hmm. that grandstanding politicians say things to get a headline. We're going to send our organizations across the border to fight these guys
and target missile strikes.
Right, missile strikes. These are essentially acts of war.
Yeah.
Now I think that the power, though, of designating them as foreign terrorist organizations, and if you look at the definition by the State Department, they fully meet each criteria. Then that empowers our entire government structure to go after what they really care about, which is just making money. Mm-hmm. You can target their money making and their money laundering schemes by going after them. And clearly we if invited and the Mexican government wants our help to use our military forces or you know, our intelligence agencies, then by all means, we should join in a partnership and go after them. But to go after them uninvited, it might be perceived as an act of war.
It didn't work early. It didn't work early in the 20th century, did it?
When General Pershing,
as kind of a was like a warm up for American forces in Europe in World War One, when American forces crossed into Mexico. And
that's
he actually used aircraft, for some of the first use of military aircraft against Pancho Villa.
Yeah, the the punitive expedition back in 1915, 1916 time frame, it was not successful. However, you could make a pretty good case that that Black Jack Pershing learned a lot about military operations and leadership, and then was able to leverage that experience to have a great effect in World War One, but it did nothing for any positive sense of a relationship between the United States and Mexico.
So here we are with border security, which, as long as I can remember, and I've been now 35 years this time around covering the news here in Southern Arizona, it's always let's throw more resources at the border. What's your take, General Buchanan, on this?
Well, I think it's a wicked set of problems. It's not just one thing. I don't think you can look at border security in isolation. I think it's tied together with what our immigration policy is, or what it should be, or what we desire. So I think that, I've been disappointed in about the last six presidential administrations have all pledged at one point in time that they were going to solve our immigration policy or update our immigration policy, and none of them have succeeded. And so
how far back? You say six presidents.
I think six,
okay.
Six presidents.
You're going, all the way back to Nixon.
Yeah, it goes back a long ways. But when you look at it, we are a country of immigrants, and by any shape of the imagination, we need these workers in our country.
Yes.
But at the same time, we want it to be controlled. Right now, it's uncontrolled. I believe that we ought to have workers here, but I also believe that they ought to pay their way. If they're going to be, consuming our services, whether it's schools, then they ought to be paying taxes, just like the rest of us are, to help resource those schools. So I think we've got to sort out what our immigration policy is, and then we've got to figure out how are we going to properly secure the border. And it requires a lot. I think that my own opinion is that the Department of Homeland Security has been woefully under-resourced, and they've been suffering for it. And, for a number of years, we've had soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines helping them out, but that's not why we have a military. We have a military to fight and win the nation's wars. And we do have some capability, which we've been lending to the Department of Homeland Security, but the bottom line is they don't have what they need to properly perform the mission.
The electronic packages are not there. Aren't we giving them everything
we
need?
Yeah, there's quite a bit going into surveillance, but I know that with the last administration, there was this big focus on a wall, and a wall is really important in a place like the boundary between San Diego and Tijuana, or even within Nogales, in these urban areas. But when you get out in the middle of the desert, a wall really is not going to have much effect, especially if you're not able to watch it regularly and then respond with something. And so, the wall isn't going to stop anybody. It really isn't.
No.
We had back in the fall of 2018 in Nogales, with a 30-foot high wall, we put nine layers of concertina wire, the military circular barbed wire, razor wire, it's called sometimes. We put nine layers of that. And in one-mile section of wall, we had more than 150 breaches of that wall in 1 2-week period.
Oh, my God.
So the wall is not going to stop anybody.
No.
But what you hope to do with an obstacle like that is slow them down enough so that you can respond. But if you're not watching it with every possible means of technology available, then it's not going to have any effect.
All right, we're talking border security. We're going to get in now to some military affairs after the break. I want to hear what Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan, who is our one-on-one guest, has to say, what he has to say about what's going on in the Ukraine with the Russian war. But we're going to take a break right here. It is the Monday one-on-one. It's presented by our friends at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Their website looking really good. They did a revamp of it. Moe'sGallery.com. They're right next to Copenhagen over there at Fort Lowell and Dodge. More with General Buchanan after this.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Each Monday at noon, we do what we call our Monday one-on-one, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Just sit down with an individual who we believe has a lot to say, and I'm really excited about who we have today. Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan. He retired after 37 years as an Army, in a great Army career in 2019. I'm not going to go through the whole resume like I did at the beginning of the show, but this man has, he's involved in a lot, including now a volunteer deputy sheriff in Cochise County. He's a commissioner for the Arizona Game and Fish. What's your take on this, the ongoing war? Now we're talking about sending some cluster bomb products over there for the Ukrainians. Just overall, when you give us the 30,000-foot view, Jeff, of what you see over there.
Well, one thing I think is that if for the people who had never been around or near Ukrainians. I think Americans now understand the resolve that the Ukrainian people, the Ukrainian government has shown in the wake of this senseless attack by Putin's forces. I think it's easy to be optimistic about the resolve of the Ukrainians and their heroism, and understand, I believe that it is very unlikely that Russia can or will win this war. I think the question is, how does it end?
Yeah,
and how long is it going
to
last?
That was my next question to you. Right. How does it end? The uprising a few weeks ago by the Wagner forces, some are saying that it's weakened Putin, but who knows? You know, when you're throwing people at the front almost a la Stalingrad 1945, and what we're seeing the Russians just putting guys that have no training over on that Eastern Front, these people are dead within 48 hours.
Yeah, it's been horrific. Brutal. Horrific cost, and of course, you know, I mean, the Russian way of war is very, very different than the American way of war. We do everything we possibly can to protect civilians, and they deliberately are attacking and targeting civilians. You know, shooting missiles at apartment complexes, mm-hmm. these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You know, their way of war our way of war is to use what we call fires, like artillery, missiles, these kinds of things, aircraft attacks, to enable maneuver on the ground to have some sort of effect. Their way of war is to use maneuver to enable fires to destroy things, to destroy large swaths of urban areas and things like this. So I think that way of fighting a war has a tremendous human cost. And, you know, what my hope and faith is that there will be an accounting in Russia at some point in time. When is that going to be? Is Putin going to personally be held accountable for the war crimes that he has enabled and committed? I don't know. I'm just not sure how it's all going to sort out. But I think there's, you know, Russia will not win.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of how long this goes and how many more people have to die.
Russia has always been real big on let's throw manpower, the frontal assault, if you will. Going back to the siege at Stalingrad, the Russians...
600,000 killed,
yeah,
if I remember. I mean, it's
they
incredible.
Would throw thousands of people into German machine gun fire. Guess why? To use up the German ammunition.
Yeah.
And some of the people that were in that frontal assault didn't even have rifles. Yeah. They were just thrown into it. So they have a whole different way of looking at military tactics that continue to this day.
Yeah, you know, it's from a strategic perspective, I think that, you know, my instinct is that Putin was trying to solidify his place in history as a great leader of Russia by, you know, expanding territory. And in fact, everything that he's done has had the exact opposite effect. You mm-hmm. know, we now have Finland as a member of NATO, Sweden on the verge of membership. These are countries that have been very steadfastly neutral, you know, since the end of World War II. And Putin has driven them to the West. It's just, you know, it's an incredible. I think the guy's it's a international war crime by any step of the imagination, and we'll see how it ends.
Let's talk about Iraq and Afghanistan. You spent a lot of time in Iraq. Do you like the way that? How do you feel about the way that finally was unpacked?
Well, lots of conflicting emotions there. Lots of, you know, I have lived up close and personal to a tremendous cost of what we did in Iraq. I'm not going to I'm not going to go back and second guess why we went in the first place and what was used as justification. I mean, you know, the whole thing about the intersection of weapons of mass destruction and terrorism, I think a lot has been made about that and intelligence failures and everything else. But in the end, I think getting rid of Saddam Hussein was a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was destabilizing. And I think that we, you know, under not everybody, certainly there were some clear voices. Eric Shinseki, former chief of staff of the Army, was a very clear voice on mm-hmm. that, you know, it was going to take a lot to be able to occupy and enable Iraq to grow into the future with the absence of Saddam Hussein.
Disarming the military, a big mistake.
I think so. Well, yeah, disbanding.
No. Disbanding the military.
Disbanding the military,
they could have
I think it was a huge mistake. I was involved with recreating the, you know, the Iraqi military. And, I mean, we pulled a lot of these guys into it, but it was a mistake. Because what we did was, the effect was we instantly disenfranchised thousands and thousands of, you know, angry young men with weapons. And that was the seeds of what eventually became al-Qaeda in Iraq and later on morphed into ISIS.
Many are always the political basis for these decisions.
So we, you know, we had a tough time for a lot of years in Iraq, but really about 2007, we had a series of turning points. A number of things came together where the tribes rose up against al-Qaeda. We had a truce, if you will, with the Mahdi army, Jaish al-Mahdi, you know, under their leader. And so what had been very bad and very ugly in 2006 and 2007, really by 2008, 9, 10, was really stabilizing. Security incidents were down. Violence was down. The professionalism of the Iraqi army and the police were up. And then, even in the fall of 2011, we went through a period of 3 months without a U.S. casualty, a U.S. person killed. 3 months. And we had 50,000 troops there at the time.
I didn't realize that. So there was a three-month period where there were no casualties.
Right. It was pretty incredible. But then at the end of that, of course, we left en masse. And there was a lot of concern that, you know, the Iraqi army and the police forces didn't need a lot. But if we were just there to give them a little bit of spine and backbone, then we could have prevented potentially what ended up happening, which was the growth of ISIS. And, you know, again, another horrific story. Fortunately, we came back and are still engaged there today. And, you know, at a pretty low level from a U.S. Perspective, but making a huge difference. And I have a lot of admiration for the Iraqi people and what they've gone through. And they're, you know, they're determined to have a stable country.
Now let's talk about Afghanistan, where you spent one tour. The way we left, it's a bad taste, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's, you know, I did have one tour there. My son has had seven tours in Afghanistan.
Yeah. Seven?
Yep. And I think one of the problems that we sometimes have is we think of Afghanistan as being like Iraq because they were going on at the same time, but fundamentally different purpose for the operation in the beginning, very different countries. You know, Iraq has tremendous natural resources, not just oil, but water, agriculture, infrastructure, you know, a sense of national identity, a history of empowerment of women in Iraq, believe it or not. None of those kinds of things really existed in Afghanistan.
And it's tribal.
Very tribal. And there are tribes in Iraq. But in Afghanistan, again, this goes back to the lack of a national identity in Afghanistan. So it was a very different place. And our initial purpose was, if you go back to, you know, the fall of 2001 and the attacks against the United States that emanated from Afghanistan, our whole purpose for the military operation was to prevent that kind of thing again.
Yeah.
So when you look at it from that lens, we're actually very successful.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
kept the incidents of Afghanistan or of Al Qaeda in Afghanistan, even what the Taliban was doing, and later on, what they called ISIS-K or ISIS in the Khorasan province. All of those, their operations were very regionally. They were focused regionally. They were not focused on the United States. So we were successful. Somewhere along the way, I think we had what one might call mission creep. We decided we wanted to
win
turn
the,
Afghanistan
the hearts
into
and minds,
a,
right?
Right, into yeah. a thriving democracy. And
it didn't
and
work.
That was hard to do when yeah. there's no fundamental foundation of democratic values.
All right. We will have you back. Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, Bill.
It's been an honor to have you on the program. Our Monday one-on-one guest presented by Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing. Their website, MohsGallery.com, right next to Copenhagen, Fort Lowell, and Dodge. It's the Buckmaster Show. Off and running here with a new week. We'll be right back.
Take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Yes, the rain, well, we didn't get any, but they did south of Tucson yesterday. So maybe that is a, maybe. It is a good sign that the rains will be coming here very soon. And I know everybody's got their fingers crossed, certainly over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road, by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, as they wait for the rain. Meanwhile, go by and get some items that for the garden, colorful items that will do very well in our rainy summer, rainy season. The 13-acre site is also home to Zocalo and all that great merchandise, beautiful merchandise, much of it imported from Mexico, some European items as well. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Green Things in their 53rd year of business, and they're open daily. Once a month, we have our monthly border report with longtime reporter and border observer Keith Rosenblum. Keith, how are you?
Hello, Bill. I'm doing very well. And in fact, as we speak, I'm with a couple who are doing their an insulin-based cancer treatment in Nogales, Mexico. We're actually at the port of entry right now.
Wow.
How's that for a strange coincidence of times? Excuse me just one second so I can tell the officer. Officer, you can take the – I'm going to wait. I have to do a radio show. So you can just take this walker, give it to them. Yeah. Okay, I'm back, Bill. Sorry, where we go.
Yeah, when folks cross over – for medical treatment, is there any issue?
No. Basically, any kind of anything goes. The only thing is that that when they go, there's no special line. In other border areas, we've actually come up with priorities for medical people. So here, you're kind of at Mexicali, for example, they have what they call a medical line. And in Nogales, they don't have that yet, so you just have to kind of ask people, hey, can I sneak in front of you? And these are one of the things that no one ever took into account. And it's kind of a, if you can hear in the background here, I'm with all the Venezuelans and all the other immigrants that are waiting for their appointment. It's really this is as much as ground zero as you and I have ever had in an interview.
What do you mean they're waiting for the appointment? Could you fill our listeners in on this?
We have Venezuelans, Haitians, you name it, from South America, and they're now using that app, the app that says, come for your appointment. I forget the name of the app, but it's what CBP is having everybody use now, and it's remarkable how smoothly it works. I was in Juarez the other day with my brother, who does human rights work, and the system now is everybody goes to the app and gets their appointments, and this is what we now do to process people. So when you want your appointment, you now have it. And when you're not at the appointment itself, you can go ahead and either go to a shelter in Mexico. If you're allowed to be admitted to the U.S., you can go to the shelter in the U.S. pending your interview as to what it is you're fleeing from, what it is your need is. It's become a very orderly system, actually.
Let me ask you, these are people who have not been arrested then as illegal crossers, is that correct?
That's correct. They have just come from this trek of sometimes 2,000 miles or 6,000 miles through the Darien Gap in Panama and Colombia. And they're all, some have family in the U.S., others are making the trek themselves. It really is a mishmash. I'm only sorry that this is one of those times where I wish that Bill was doing TV still, because if I went to a video feed, you'd be seeing all these beautiful people, I mean, with kids and their suitcases. Sometimes they're here overnight waiting. And this is this is Nogales. The same thing plays out in Juarez, Tijuana, Mexicali, all along the border. It's a fascinating thing to witness. I've been crossing here 40 years and I've never seen this number of people waiting, but it's not because the inflow is that many. It's because the faces have changed. These are people from further south. Mexicans can make their appointments at the to come through, and you go back to their homes or go to a hotel. When you're coming from Jamaica, or Haiti or further south, it's quite the ordeal. And you may not have the money to go to a hotel. You may not have the shelters here. I don't know how they are capacity-wise, but they're set up. And the Mexican government has spent a huge amount of money to receive people. That you'll recall, there was the fire at the Juarez Refugee Center about 2 months ago where the immigrants all died. I think they were all Venezuelans. Actually, I saw that the other day for the first time, too. It's spooky. But anyway, this is what you're hearing in the background. You're hearing the Border Patrol guy telling people, for the regular crossers to come through. And then you have this, I want to say there's maybe 100 people who are waiting for their appointments upstairs here in Nogales to do the have their interviews for admission. And then if and when they're admitted, then they can, then either there's family, or go to a refugee center. I have a niece who's a freshman or now sophomore at Mount Holyoke College, and she's doing a volunteer project with the Diocese of El Paso. And so she's working now at a refugee center in El Paso for those who have been admitted and are now, waiting for their family to send the money or to move on in the U.S.
Well, it would be very heartbreaking. Someone has come all the way from South America. They've been put their lives in danger crossing the Darien Gap in Panama, that 50-mile area that is so treacherous, and then to wind up there in Nogales and then be told, no, you've got to go back. The whole thing could be very heartbreaking, I'm sure, and very
amazing. Well, I don't know how often that happens. In fact, this kind of serves, I wish I knew more about the topic, Bill, but I would say that one of the things that would be fascinating for you and your listenership would be to talk to the port director here and ask him to lay out how they handle it. It'd be a fabulous interview. I'd be the first person to listen mm-hmm. and learn from it.
I'm curious about the process of the interview. How long do they typically last? And do the people get the word immediately, or do they have to go back and wait?
I honestly could talk to people here and ask them. The ones that I'm looking at are all very, like what I say, they're very fresh. These are people you might expect to see getting off an aircraft. Everyone's looking good. It's not the grungy people that have come from, days in a train or something. These are middle-class people. As I say, I could tell that when I started conversations, we're talking about people who are a lot of times well-educated, Venezuelans. Venezuelans, is emptying out this population as people flee to Colombia, Brazil, wherever, because of the situation there. I don't know enough about the process to know what the rejection rate is, but I do know that these people generally have family. I think they're being admitted mostly in order to stay with family members. They have somebody who can show solvency in the U.S. But, Bill, this is one of those things where I'm caught off guard because I haven't done my homework, but I wasn't prepared. This is one of those unusual things where you just all of a sudden find yourself at ground zero, and I'll learn more about it so I can do a better job for you on the next, get me on tomorrow or the day after, and I'll tell you about it.
We had a fascinating half hour at the beginning of the show today, Keith Rosenblum, with Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan. He commanded the 6,000 troops on the southwest border, and he says we have not had an immigration policy going back at least six presidents. This is something we've talked about a lot on this program. And at this point right now, we still don't really have an immigration policy, do we, Keith Rosenblum?
We sure don't. And you know something, Bill? Some things are left to not do. And maybe that's the best way. We also don't have a lot of laws there. We have probable cause and we have reasonable man. Those are not metric standards. There's not a calorie level or a centimeter level or an inch level that goes along with those. Those are things that are left to discretion. And the Wall Street Journal in the 1980s, before Simpson Mazzoli, was arguing, don't make a policy. Let's handle this as the needs present themselves. Let's not have something. So Americans are great at wanting to have solutions. Let's go ahead and pardon debt. And that's what Biden runs. Well, guess what? The Supreme Court said no to that, too. So as we strive to have policies and finite things, sometimes our own laissez-faire or our own neglect of issues actually may turn out to be the best. I mean, I don't honestly know. I don't know what Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida. They have a labor shortage there, and he's going after illegal workers as if he's going to solve a problem and make the far right proud of him. by getting rid of a problem that a lot of people would say don't exist, or they would say, please don't solve this particular problem. We do not have an immigration policy. We don't have lots of policies. And maybe we don't need anything that definitive. Maybe the broken system we have ultimately with declining birth rate and the need for labor, maybe this is the way it was meant to be. I don't know. I'm just conjecturing.
All right, let's see if we can get a quick question in. Caller Matt calling us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Go ahead, Matt. You're with Keith.
Yeah, hey, Keith. This may not be in your area of expertise, but there was a recent fire, a massive fire, that took out one of Pemex's oil platforms, a very significant effect to their oil production. I was wondering, have you heard anything from Pemex or from AMLO regarding the status of that platform? By the way, what's going on with AMLO? He's been sort of quiet this last month.
No, yeah, but he talked for another 2 hours this morning. He has not been quiet. You haven't heard him, but don't worry, he's still blathering away. The answer to your question about Pemex is this: Lloyd's of London insures everything. So the Mexicans aren't going to take a hit on something like that. All these things, all these standards, you know, technical standards about platforms and things, there's insurance for all that. So it's not going to be as if it's any kind of blow to Mexico. But I'm not familiar with it. I heard it mentioned, but it's not anything that causes much strife because, again, those things are covered at a huge level against losses. AMLO himself is very busy in the midst of political season because he's got six people that he's pointed to that want to succeed him. And he's in the midst of a really ticklish situation because there's somebody from the opposition party. So it's always been a done deal that Morena, which is López Obrador's party, would be presumptively, you know, that elect the next president. Well, guess what? The inability of the six people that he has designated as kind of in a primary, none of them is actually winning much in the way of a claim. And there's emerged this fascinating woman who's from Hidalgo State, named Xochitl Galvez, who all of a sudden people from the opposition are coalescing behind, and that has Morena and López Obrador really, really worried. And so even though it's not campaign season in Mexico right now, as they do primary things, the real election campaigning isn't supposed to start until September, the reality is that it's got the Morena party and President López Obrador in a fit right now.
Do they limit the time for the campaign season? It can only be in a designated period?
Yes, correct, Bill. The correct designated period and with campaign limitations. But it doesn't matter. The president is the president, and he can reach those whenever he wants and get away with it. That's what's happening right now. That is a topic of a program in and of itself.
All right, let's take a break right here. More with Keith Rosenblum, who is live on the scene in Nogales, Sonora. And we'll be right back with Keith.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax
The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. This portion of our program presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Time to start planning that getaway over to Silver City where it will be cooler. I can guarantee it because of the elevation. 10 degrees at least cooler in Silver City. Lots to do, a lot of outdoor activities that make those temperatures over there. Look at that, 93 right now. Pretty nice over in Silver City. A lot of outdoor activities. Find out about what to do, where to stay, and even where to dine at their great website, southwestnewmexico.org. Let's go back on the live line to our border reporter, observer, friend, Keith Rosenblum, who is with us actually in Nogales, Arizona, correct, Keith?
Keith Rosenblum is actually doing this program in both nations today, Bill, crossed over from.
You have a foot in both countries, Keith, and you're also breaking up a little bit. Let's try again. Go ahead.
Let me try again, Bill. Am I audible now?
Yeah, you're good now. Go ahead.
Okay, well, Keith Rosenblum just crossed over and is now in Nogales, Arizona. And Keith Rosenblum actually spent a half hour in secondary inspection yesterday because he decided to make sure that he held firm on his rights not to disclose information. If you want the story, Keith would be happy to tell you.
Yes, I would love to hear the story. You decided not to disclose some information to customs people.
Correct. I came in yesterday at 4 o'clock. A lovely CBP officer interviews me. I believe her name is Burick. And she says to me for three times, do you have anything to declare? Do you have anything to declare? I'm saying, no, I don't. And then she says, well, you know, let me go ahead and finish my questioning because I have to. Meats, fruits, vegetables, no. Medicines, no. Do you have more than $10,000? And so Keith Rosenblum, on the fourth time she's asked me this question, says, Miss, I know what the meaning of the word declare is. I have nothing to declare. Again, I'm telling you for that.
And you're telling her for about the 10th time. So go ahead, Keith. Again, you broke up a little bit. Go. How's that? Keith, are you there? Okay.
Yes, I'm here, Bill.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes.
Don't move and around. Now, don't move around. Go ahead.
Okay. Now my CBP officer says to me, well, then how much do you have?
Yeah.
And at that point, that's where Keith Rosenblum snaps in his own way and says, I've decided not to tell you. If you want to know how much money Keith has in his pockets, then they're secondary. Send me over. And it was kind of a dare. It's kind of like a, you know, so she says, okay. And she puts in her little computer that I was, you know, whatever I was not polite or I didn't just want to disclose. So I spent half an hour in timeout yesterday in secondary I was there for that period of time with a guy who was there for taking too much alcohol into the U.S. and another person who was going to use fake ID. They kept me there in timeout. And at the very end, they said, we're going on the half hour. Said, okay, come on up and get your stuff. They'd gone through my phone, gone through the my little backpack, which just had clothes in it and some newspapers, and never asked me how much I had. So I had the answer to the question. Well, I had like $35 on me. And I said, okay, because now I'm free to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I said then made Keith Rosenblum proud, and his dad, who's in a grave in Evanston, Illinois, would be proud. And I hope other people would be too. I said, okay, officer, you know, I have your ear now. He says, yeah. I said, okay, listen, when you ask people the question for the third time, or especially the fourth time, it stops being inquiry and it moves into an area of harassment.
Yes, yes.
And what you're telling me is that I'm a liar, basically. You're now it's moved into a confrontation area. So no matter how polite you are, now, would you please tell that to your supervisor? This is Officer Moran, now that I'm talking to at CBP at Deacon Cinza. And he very abruptly says to somebody the effect of, thank you very much, have a nice day, which is basically telling me, you can kiss my rear end, guy. So, again, because Keith Rosenblum knows these men and women and has nothing but admiration for the overwhelming majority, but has seen your civil rights diminish through the years, Keith Rosenblum says, no, you are not going to treat me with that civility. I still have a point to make here. He hands me a comment card, which is, if you've ever done a comment card for Border Patrol or CBP, they have no validity whatsoever. It's a waste of time. So I go ahead and I said, no, you tell your supervisor. How about that? Because what you're doing is you're harassing the very people that are paying your wages. This all flowed just so, like, naturally, because I've been through this for so long. Anyway, that's the story of Keith being in secondary yesterday. There's no climax to it. That's just what happened. But people should know about this kind of thing, and they need to remind people who they work for.
Well, I have a question. Do you have to declare how much money you have on you as you cross into the United States?
You have asked a question that I don't know. I didn't know with the immigrants questions right now, nor do I know that. I just know that I would have normally said I got $35. But after this incessant kind of rude, to me, really just disrespectful conduct, it was time to draw the line. And I was not going to say, and if they wanted to strip search or, you know, put their hands on me and then figure out how much bills, it would have come.
That is really.
That meant that much to them. But this is what goes on daily. And it's only when I get a chance, if it happens to people all the time, Bill, and it's only when it happens to someone that has the opportunity to access to a microphone like yours, that anyone's really aware of it. If I told you the stories about diminishing civil rights and the opposition or adversarial nature of law enforcement and people, you'd be shocked. The thing is, really, word doesn't get out enough.
Well, you've got your homework. There are two questions that need to be answered the next time you are with us. One, tell us the next time about what's the process, how many are turned back roughly with the after they've had the interviews? And also, I'm curious about this thing about currency. Do you have to declare what you've basically got? What
like
you've got in your pocket?
Homework. I appreciate it. So it's been a while since I've had some, and I will look into both and get back to you and your listenership.
Well, thank you, Keith. And I had one other quick question. I've got about 30 seconds. You said you went into time out. Is that considered the...
No, that's Keith's phrase. You're being sent into secondary inspection where you do not have the right to talk to anybody. You have you're not under arrest, but you're not free to go.
Mm, interesting. So it's kind of the next step.
It's a no man's land, Bill. You have no rights. You have your phone can be combed through or copied. It can be cloned. You are not in either country yet. Okay. You have not been admitted to the U.S.
All right, Keith Rosenblum, we always learn something from you, and we'll check with you the next time. Thank you, Keith.
My pleasure. Bye.
Thanks a lot. Keith Rosenblum, who had 1 foot in Mexico and 1 foot in the United States today for his report. on the scene right there on the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of John on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster wishing everyone well. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. Back with you in about 23 hours for the Tuesday edition of the Buckmaster Show.